This is down to brass tacks. This writer says, don't mention my name, but they say I've been a civil servant for the past 40 years. I retired from the public service on September 1st, 2018. I expected to receive my pension and gratuity on the 27th of September, 2018. When I checked, neither the pension nor gratuity was available. This is now October 5th, and I have not received it. No one from the relevant government department has communicated with me about the delay. I heard that about 100 persons, retired public servants, are in this position. Will somebody in government clarify what the situation is with respect to these people who have recently retired and were expecting their pension and gratuity by the end of last month? This is down to brass tacks. Winnie?
Yes, please. Hi.
Yes.
Let me lower my radio, please.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, the lady just now said she's going to hire Mr. Michael Ashley to defend into for her lawyer to defend her about the bonds.
Yes.
Well, while she's there, she could ask you at the same time to represent the people that cannot get their money back from CLECO. But it was funny when she called his name, though. I laughed so bad. Anyway, now, what I'm talking about, when the DLP was in power in the two terms, they let home people, 3,500, and every day, week, month, people was going home, and they were taking on people. Now, this government is trying its best not to let anyone go, as you know that, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Ellis, sorry, I love Mr. Johnson so bad. So, now,
I hope you don't call his name in the wrong circumstances.
No, I don't talk in my sleep, actually. No, they should consider what the DLP did to the people, and the people are suffering. And they have the audacity to come and talking about what this government should do and what the government shouldn't do. I'll know. The DLP put Barbados 10-year loss. They call it Lost Barbados now, yeah? Because they have to get it back. This government is only in for not quite 4 months yet. And I'm asking the people to give them time. They have to go through the books. They have to know where the money gone, where the money is, to able to pay out. The gentleman who said he works 40 years, of course he wants his money. But they just give the government time. They're going to find your money and where it is to pay you, okay? But what is wrong? No DLP should come and criticize the BLP at the moment. Not at the moment. Because it's not 4 months yet.
Well, and that's one. That's your view. Well,
that is my view, and yes. It should be every right-thinking person's view.
Well, I don't know whether you're classifying me as right-thinking or not.
Because, you are right.
Well, I want to say to you that we are in a difficult place.
Very, very.
But it does not mean that people are not, they don't have the right and don't need to, from time to time, examine the options that have been pursued to ask the question whether there could have been another way, a better option. You can't expect Barbadians to just sit down and say, so because it's a tough situation, the government has taken an action, and we should just sit down and say, okay, well, the government did the best thing that could have been done in all the circumstances.
So what about the CLECO people? They was in power and all
that. But you know full well that when the CLECO issue erupted, there were people in the opposition then who were questioning whether the government had taken the right step.
Because we didn't know what
Because
was
that's the way that we do business here.
Do you think, be honest with you, do you think Ms. Monty and her ministers would want to see people lose their money, don't get their money?
But you thought that the Democratic Labour Party ministers wanted to see people in a similar situation?
Yes, because they went in and get 2.8 billion and whatever, they lick it out. What they done with it?
No, we're talking about CLECO. We talked about the CLECO situation.
CLECO money, listen, you know, it started from
Winnie, let's be reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that people who have been in government deliberately, generally speaking, because there may be exceptions to every rule, deliberately set about to create hardship for the people of a country.
But
sometimes the advice that they take and their approach to people generally in the country puts them in a position where people start to say, but you know, you're not doing the right thing. Look at an alternative approach. This system works that way.
Did they do it?
But they didn't. But that's why in this current environment, people have been led to believe that they can speak to the government, that they can reflect to the government the hardship that they feel, and that the government will listen and where possible, will review what is being done and try their best to adjust. Now, there are limitations in an IMF program, for instance, there are limitations on what a government can do.
Mm-hmm.
All right, because you have said to the IMF, these are the things that we are going to do to correct the problem. You got to be very good to be able to move away from that program and get their blessing if there is failure in the program because of the deviation.
Okay, can I speak now?
Yes.
No, when they were printing money, none of these DLP supporters come in and say, stop printing
money.
You're
spending too much time on
them. They have to do it.
You're spending too much time on the Dems, man.
No, I
am. Let's deal with what we've got to deal with today.
Yeah, when they're dealing with the BLP, then you mash my liquor toe.
No. In all fairness,
printing and they want you to buy bun. And I came on the radio and said, do not buy no bun.
People in Barbados who listen to the program know full well how we deal with the Dems when they get overbearing with their political.
Overbearing
slack.
Every time they get government. As far as I am reading up,
you now, have the government right now. Hardship is being inflicted on some people, and the people want to hear what is the best way forward. Okay, and the government has a responsibility to explain to them as many times as is necessary what were the options and why it is that they have to go through the hardship and to what extent they are trying their best to ease hardship where possible.
But they're trying. But do you know each time the DLP have the government, the BLP have to come and rescue Barbados?
Man, that's old talk. I hear you with us many years.
You know that.
I don't know that. I hear you with it. You want to repeat it often enough that I will believe it.
But you know it's true.
Don't tell me why you know.
Government, they mash it up.
I don't know that. Okay. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Mr. Ellis.
Yes, sir.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
I don't want to prolong the bedbug talk, right? But there's another side to it I have not heard any voice spoken about as yet.
The same thing with the fowls. They got an environmental side to bedbugs?
No, I don't want to hear very well. The goodly doctor said that it is not a health problem. But I want to tell the goodly doctor, although it may not be a health problem, it could become a financial problem. Because I heard a caller to this program, the people's program, say that it cost him over $5,000 to get rid of these bed bugs from NIE. You remember that call?
Yeah, somebody said it cost him money.
Right. This person said it cost him over $5,000. He had to change clothes, bed, everything. I know a lady who found them in her son's bedroom, and she had to get rid of the bed, the bedsheet, everything. So although it may not be a health problem, it truly can be a financial problem. The other thing I want to mention to you is it is hard for a mother, a father, a brother, somebody in your household to write a letter saying, they've ever lived at me. But you know what? Anybody that lives in a household can write anything. But what I think should happen, and this is for the Ministry of Transport Works, One thing they can do is, if you've got a justice of the peace that lives in the area, the person can get his family to write a letter and let the justice of peace verify and sign it.
Well, somebody else suggested that. Well, look, we await the statement that is going to come from government on how they're dealing with it. Okay?
Okay, mate.
Uh-huh. Thank you. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks.
Hello.
Yes, 4341790. Hello.
Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Right. Earlier I heard a gentleman talking about the Route 6 vans turning around by Queen's Park. And so he was saying that he would not pay his fare if he had to get out the van right there and not be taken into the terminal. However, I think this is something that licensing authority needs to look into. I'm saying this because the Route 6 van runs on a circular route, similar to the City Circle bus for the Transport Board.
Right.
The Transport Board City Circle bus brings passengers into the terminal because at the end of the day, the terminal is not the final destination. So on that same ground, the number 6 van should be able to bring in people. Because how is it that you got in Bank Hall and you're really going over the globe, but you have to get out in Bridgetown? Your van is going to go to the back of the line. You have to walk all the way in, go all the way into the terminal, get into the van at the front, and then pay again. But you have not gotten to your destination. So I understand what he's saying, but I can understand why the number 6s are refusing to go into the terminal, because it does not...
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah. No one take that into account.
Okay.
So a number 6 is like a City Circle. There's
yeah,
no
somebody had raised that with me about 2 weeks or 3 weeks ago, explaining how it was working and how the bus would have to go up by the globe.
Yeah.
It was a hardship because it would mean paying 2 bus fares just for that. And it came across as being a bit tough.
Exactly. But as I said, that to me, that should be the only van that is allowed to come in with people and leave with people, just as the City Circle bus does it and the Warren's ABC Highway bus for the Bridgetown Terminal does it as well.
Okay. Thank you very much for calling. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, please. I was hearing a lot of people complaining about the licensing authority and you having to have a bill in order to renew the license. And there was a gentleman in paper this week talking about his 19-year-old son and how is he going to renew a license when he doesn't have a bill in his name. I'm saying we just had a general election in May. The Electoral Boundaries Commission sent out mail to every single Barbadian that had to vote.
Yeah.
Isn't it possible that his son and teenagers of that age I would have gotten, and other people who are that side, can they carry it to license authority? Because on that it has your name, your address, I believe your ID number is on it as well, right? Because it is telling you exactly where you're supposed to vote.
Well, a lot depends upon what licensing authority stipulates that you should bring.
But they're saying
they want proof of address.
Proof of address. But Electoral Boundaries Commission, but that's the head proof of address there. Because they can't send something to you unless then they don't have that address. I'm one of those people that live.
But you know, one of the difficulties with it is that the proof of address must apply to a particular period. So, in other words, you don't want to, about 3 months or something like that. So, it means that it is quite possible for a person to have received that communication that you spoke about, but they could have moved from the address since then. So, that is why they are specifying that the proof of address must be valid for a 3 month period.
No, because I'm saying I'm one of those people that I've lived home for all of my life. Yes, I pay bills in the house. Yes, I do things, but they're all in my mother's name.
Yes.
It's not in my name, so, right? I do what I have to do, right? And I remember having to go to the bank and they needed something with my address. And Electoral Boundaries has sent out one of those flyers to me. And I took that.
And it worked.
And it worked. Because the bank wanted my ID and ID, and it needed a proof. And I used that. Right? And that was because that is my address. That is where
I live. But that would not be well, in the not too distant future, I'm sure you would find yourself in a situation where that wouldn't be applicable within the time frame that has been mentioned. Within May. This is October. This is October now. So yep. by the 24th or the end of October or so, you wouldn't be able to use that for the 3 month period.
Even my niece, I call her my daughter, she used hers to get an item from one of the stores.
Well, let's wait until the government issues the statement today and they clarify exactly how they're going to deal with it, you know? That's what they've promised.
And another thing, the people complaining about minibuses over in that River Stand. For so many years, they have been accustomed of the vans doing so much foolishness. You're putting you off where you want to get off and whatnot. I'm saying, if she says that van just now, that she says it's like City Circle, yes, I can understand you being on the van and going in, but there are so many number 6 where the City Circle, when the City Circle goes into the terminal, goes, it's only the City Circle alone at that gate. If you have a number of vans, a number of number 6, how would it look? You come off the road and go straight in front of me. What it should be, it should be able to be a transferable thing that you'll be able to get into the other van and something transferable through the other van or something like that.
They really need to work it out.
But these is that are. This is a way of controlling them in some way because they're doing too much foolishness. I live in an area where every morning you see 5 to 7. They come through my gap, and my gap is not the bus route. And they come through my gap until about after 9 something to 10. One hit a man there out in the morning, and you know, he tells me, "Ma, you see me coming up the road and you turn up on me." The gentleman is in the gap. The gentleman live in the gap. The gentleman was going home. And he go out with the man. Because the people in his van got out there and went out on the road and get off on another van. He lost his load. Right? It's doing a lot of foolishness and it needs to stop. And as for the people with the bonds, when the government, the previous government was telling them, come and buy the bonds, I'm not hearing the former central bank government voice now. And he was the head one that's telling you, come and buy the bonds, come and buy the bonds. You're not hearing him now. He's gone quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the head one that was telling you, buy the bonds. The bonds are this, the bonds are next, the bonds. Right? I know people were telling me, go and buy the bonds. And I tell them, yeah, we got some money for $25.
You got to make the distinction between the government savings bonds and the other so-called bonds, the treasury bills, treasury notes, debentures. People who bought savings bonds have not been hit in this way.
Yeah.
It's the treasury bills and the treasury notes.
But you remember they were just pushing these bonds because they needed money and they were getting money however they could. And that was wrong. Right? Because now they've got us in a whole heap of doodle and now people got to take a hit for their hard-earned money that they work and they decide to put into a savings of such for a rainy day as we usually call it. And it is wrong. It is very wrong. But what are you going to do?
Well, if they didn't put the money in treasury bonds or in treasury notes and stuff, chances are wherever else they'd put it, they would still be taking a blow. I mean, can't even, putting your money in the bank is take a blow now.
Okay.
And I do it every month.
If you go to a different ATM than bank you deal with, you pay $2 to take off money. $2 come off of your account, come out of your account when you take off, what you take off out of the other ATM. You got to pay $2. So however.
Taking blows however you look at it.
However you look at it.
Yeah.
Right? But people should be very skeptical.
But we need to, you know what we need to.
Put things that are too good.
You know what is very important in all of this discussion?
Yeah.
It has not been put on the table yet. the government says we have an IMF program.
Yeah.
And we are going to look after the vulnerable.
Yep.
We have a safety net, which, yep, as I interpret it, you're going to try to make sure that they get some assistance, financial assistance.
Yes.
But this country is likely to go through a pretty traumatic experience.
Oh,
and
yeah,
then, and this is what needs to be discussed is the social support and the psychological support that many people need.
Yeah.
When once they start to feel the full blast of what is coming at us, because people are talking now because of the fear.
Yeah.
The other side of this is when they actually experience the reality of it.
Yes.
And I don't hear much talk about that side of it. How do you counsel the people who are hardest hit by this? The people who need it for medicine, the people who need it for nursing care.
Yes.
The people who feel as though they are really left in a position where there
the
is nowhere to turn.
Yes.
And to what extent do you need to use a wide range of community services and stuff? The churches, for instance, how do you embrace them in this whole process of outreach to those people?
Well,
and the professional services that exist in the country, because we take this lightly. But I knew from all back in the years when we were talking about the last IMF agreement,
yeah,
that the choices were never going to be easy. And we remember when we had the standby arrangement, we didn't have easy choices.
No.
We had to get certain cuts in various areas. And people felt it back then. I remember people marching and saying, these cuts don't heal. All right?
No, they don't.
Right. And so how are we going to address that?
Well, I don't know. Because in a household where you have two people working who live in paycheck to paycheck, but they're making it, it's going to be hard if one of them lose their job. And we know one of them might lose their job.
That's correct.
Right?
And it will take some time before they can get the training and all of these things that the government says they're going to put in place.
What I need the government to do is this thing with the stamps. When people go home, stop sending them for two stamps. Because if I pay my national insurance is like a nest for me to fall back on when I lose my job, that I can get money to put in my pocket until I find a job. Remember the last administration did this second stamp that you had to go warrants to get, and if you didn't
get that,
you can't get the.
So you went from one place to the next.
Yes, you had to go from one, and they were supposed to put someone at the NAS building, the building where you go to get in Columbia Rock to get the stamp, but they never did, which I thought was stupid, because I believe they should have sent someone from the building in Columbia Rock over to that site that gives you that stamp, and one from Warren's over that site, and allow the people from St. Lucie, St. Peter, St. Andrew, and them to come to Warren, and allow Christchurch, St. Michael, St. Philip, and St. George and St. Thomas could go either way, because they're in the middle of the country, could come to whichever one was suitable for them. So they would go and get both stamps one place and don't have to get a bus to go from one place to the next place, back to the next, because it was too much. It was too much. And I don't understand. You're not working. Where are you going to find all this bus fare? And if bus fare do go up, you got to get these two stamps and you're not working. Where are you going to find this bus fare? You understand? Where are you going to find this bus fare? So I need them to get rid of that second stamp or find something to sort out the people that they don't have to spend so much, because it is going to be hard. And for all the people that don't eat bread, fruit and sweet potato and yam and cassava, I think welcome to our world. Welcome to Barbados.
Well, I don't know. I think this is much deeper than meets the eye. There are so many scenarios confronting families. There are a lot of people who've never really been able to get on their feet, for instance. I mean, those people are going to be more of a drag and a burden to the other people in a family. So the first objective is, how are you going to work with those people to try to get them also to be part of this training program and stuff that the government is into? It cannot be just, I mean, the first priority for government would be to look at the people who are being displaced. But you know that ultimately we need to go wider and deeper than that. So we expect to hear more about the ongoing training and new initiatives to encourage people to take on tasks and areas that hitherto they might not even have been aware of. The people who are left with the burden, they too have to be in a process of adjustment to the new reality. I mean, people may find themselves with two cars in a family and one has to go. Some people may find themselves in a situation where one car in the family and you have to let go of it. I mean, these are hard times and very difficult choices. And I believe we need to brace ourselves for this in a way that we didn't. Say to yourself, it is likely to be more difficult than it was the last time around, those who experienced it. Because as you see it unfolding, you are realizing the magnitude of the decisions that have been taken so far. This is what they have always meant by the need to restructure the Barbados economy. This is why politicians refuse to do it, because it is costly in terms of votes. You have to be politically strong to take this one on, because it is painful. So don't expect a bed of roses. Not at all. That's based on the experience that we have had over the years and where we are right now. I would suggest that we have to look at it in that way. And nobody can sit in this country and feel that they will not be touched by it. We will all be touched. Down to brass tacks, I was just talking with Dennis about some of the challenges that we are facing and the difficulties that Barbados faces in policing the streets, and some of the issues that were raised here today with the cyclists and all of that. If you go to more developed countries, you'll see how they have dealt with a lot of this. And they've used technology to a much greater extent. I think that Barbados needs to do that, to a degree that we haven't used it so far. I mean, I recognize that some work has been done in that regard. And sometimes we have cameras in places that people do not know. But we need to explore the use of technology to the max as a means of trying to bring greater order to a lot of what is happening around here. All the garbage disposal, illegal garbage disposal and stuff like that you see around the place. But after you've recognized what people have done, then you've got to be able to track them down and hold them accountable for what has taken place. I do not believe that the answer lies in having more and more people on the streets, but we can use that technology to a greater degree. I suppose ultimately one day, I don't know if we'll be alive to see it, Dennis, but the artificial intelligence era is upon us, you know, and we've got things like robots now that are being built to do things that normally human beings would have been asked to do. So we'll see. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, welcome.
How are you today, sir?
I'm well, and you?
I just came from the central bank, so I'm not that well.
Talk to me about the experience.
I'm alive and walking.
you went to the central bank for what purpose? As part of the forum?
This is what I called. I didn't call with anything of economic significance. I wanted to tell you that I went to the central bank this morning.
Yes.
I only got home, came right in and called Brass Tacks.
Yes.
The central bank was full of people. Full of a lot of disgruntled people. I knew quite a few of people, a few of them. We had lots of chats going on and what have you. I asked a lady, I said, Mr. Ellis, some people would know, everybody wouldn't know, but I have said that I intend to take a stand even if I am alone. I went to the central bank today to take that stand. And I asked clearly, if I disagree, if I do not accept this, what will happen? And I was told about the escrow account. I said, okay, fine, my hands are tied. If I accept this and I say that I disapprove of what of the restructuring program, does the same thing apply? She said, no, that is not a part of contract. I said, I thought so, because I've never seen the word approve or disapprove in a contract yet. Acceptance is a different thing. So I did my bit. I accepted the offer, and I disapproved of the method of restructuring the account. I handed my forms in, and I said to the lady who was in front of me, ladies, not one lady, there were three, said, ladies, I have something to say, and I want to say it loudly, but please, it is not targeted at you. It has nothing to do with you. They said, okay. I turned around, I waved my envelope in the air, and I went, people, I did it three times until the grand salle went quiet. I said, people, I do this under duress. Under duress. Put down my envelope, sir, and walked out. I took my stand without actually having to disenfranchise my wife or myself, hopefully. That's what I called to tell Brass Tacks today, Mr.
Explain this escrow account issue that was raised.
I don't understand personally how it could be, because if something is cancelled, it is cancelled. If you have money in an escrow account, then there's money. They're suggesting there's no money, so there can't be any escrow account. What are you holding in escrow? I didn't want to get into all that at the central bank. It's the last day. It was crowded. I honestly, because listening to ministers talk, and I honestly believe basically that there was no other choice. So I didn't go down that path too much.
Some people have considered legal action. What do you think about that?
I think it's a fantastic idea. I think it's a fantastic idea.
What would be the grounds under which you think you could fight it?
A lawyer would have to tell me that. I think it's a fantastic idea simply because we had an agreement and you broke the agreement. And there's absolutely nothing stopping you from breaking the one that I just signed upon again. If we can just simply go ahead and do money contracts like that and dismiss them when we feel like, then, it has to be tested. Whether you will win or
would
not.
Would you know, but, and of course...
I thought you'll win.
And then,
give it. You're going to pass some legislation and you're boo-booed, end of story.
It's because it takes a long time to get things through the law courts of Barbados. And in the meantime, the government is arguing this is urgent and this is tied to an agreement with the International Monetary Fund.
Mm-hmm. I agree that that is what it is tied.
But then you also say, from all that you have heard, you don't believe that the government had a choice.
No, I disagree with that totally.
Right, tell me.
That reminds me of...
But I thought we were trying to get you on the air on...
When Clyde was on?
On the day that Clyde was on.
I was trying. I kept hearing the phone rang once. I went beep, and I was out. I tried for a very long time.
Well, you know, the point is that given the kind of concerns that you have raised, and being the quality caller that you are... Not only in relation, to this, but some of the other issues. You are the kind of person that we should still try to effect that kind of dialogue, so that your questions are placed there, so that others in a similar position can hear the responses to your concerns, and your articulation of the view that we could have done something else. It's something that either Mr. Strawn, the MP, or Ambassador Maskell should be answering people like you.
You know, Mr. Ellis, you have never heard, if you listen very carefully, you will never hear Clyde Maskell say, right, that the government has run out of money, you know. You are not going to hear Clyde Maskell say that at all.
But this issue was this about the government running out of money as much as it has been about the issues with respect to, one, the foreign reserves, and then the interest, more importantly, this one is about the government's interest on debt.
Yeah, but that's fine. But Mr. Ellis, let us think about this. We're only dealing with domestic. I'm going to separate the two this time.
Yes.
Let's leave aside the foreign debt for now.
Yes.
I'm particularly going to target the individuals and pensioners. The interest on debt, what government calls their debt payments, is spending that goes back into the economy from pensioners and individuals. So if the government spends, say, approximately $29 million in interest payments from that group of people out of approximately $460 million in debt, you can run that through your multiplier and get a rough idea of how much of it is going back into the economy. And roughly, I could say that is about, if it's 25, about $29 million through the multiplier effect is going back into the economy. So to cut that amount of money out of individuals and pensioners, banks don't plow interest back into spending. Neither do corporate. You know, not even pension funds. Pension funds might show increases in the dividend on their statements. So the money is not necessarily going immediately back in. But pensioners and individuals, it goes right back into the economy. They don't save the interest. The interest is spent. All right? So we could look, I am guessing at a number now because I haven't done my numbers in detail yet until I can get accurate numbers as to what it actually is. But we're looking for about a $29 to $30 million from individuals and pensioners loss in GDP this year. Well, not this year because this only just started, but within a year's time.
Okay, sir.
It's going to slap the economy.
Okay, well.
No economist can come and tell you that this can create growth.
All right, okay. Thank you very much. Well, you know, the growth is not tied to this exclusively, though. I don't think that you can reasonably look at it as being dependent upon this exclusively. Anyhow, thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. I think we got time for one more call today. Hello. Who's this lucky last caller? Yes, welcome.
Welcome. Thanks a lot, but am I will be able to get on?
You are on, but you only got 5 minutes, so 4 minutes, actually.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm. You're on the air.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
A blessed good day to you, sir.
Turn your radio down. Turn your radio off, please.
You're okay. What I have to say is that the country got in this position not for a short time, but over a period of time. So, if we are going to try to get back up, we are on a journey. You don't take shortcuts. I mean, as I say, we got a lot of time to get back in the position that we should be in, but Don't let people suffer through the consequences. Let us take the time to get back up. You know? So, once they were talking about thousands of dollars and millions, but we're talking about billions now. And soon we'll be talking about trillions. So, as a country to be developed, let's take our time, and I hope Mia, when she set up a structure, which is now being able to the International Monetary Fund.
Okay, well, we're gonna have to wrap you up. Thank you very much for your contribution. An economist monitoring the program. refers to this caller's comments about the debt restructuring effort effects on pensioners invested in government securities. He says that the guy is off. Pension interest spent back into the economy is very small relative to the size of the economy. All right. Thanks to you. Thanks to you all. Thanks to Dennis Johnson. I really wish you a really pleasant afternoon and a great weekend. I'm David Ellis.